Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hi, I'm Lawrence Dallaglio, and this episode of the Evening Standard Rugby Podcast is brought to you in partnership with QBE Business Insurance. QBE is one of the world's leading insurers, and they will help your business build resilience through risk management and insurance solutions.
The Evening Standard Rugby Podcast with Lawrence Dallaglio.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Evening Standard Rugby Podcast. I'm Lawrence Dallaglio. Joining me, as always, after a wonderful weekend of Premiership rugby action and Women's Six Nations rugby action, is Steve Gording from the Evening Standard. Steve, how are you, sir?
Lawrence, I'm very well. Happy Easter to you, or as we are recording on Monday, I guess it's Happy April Fool's Day, is it? Were you a victim today or not? Did you manage to get away with it?
I think I got away with it. Happy Easter to you too. I'm assuming you're in your Easter egg hunting gear that you're wearing today.
Yeah, it has been a weekend of Easter egg hunting and also playing little tricks on the... When you've got small children, it's a bit easier to get away with an April Fool's Day joke. But I did tell them this morning that their climbing frame had fallen over, but they were none too impressed. But it was still there when they went outside. There's been some random ones about today. I don't know if you've seen them. Apparently, South Africa and Georgia are going to join the Six Nations. It's going to become the Eight Nations in 2026. And also, Harlequins are moving to Brighton. So if you believe those two, then you've obviously been fooled.
One of the best April Fools I had was when Harlequins announced on Twitter, as it was then, that Lawrence Dallaglio was joining Harlequins. And they put out a statement. And only a fool would really believe that, I suppose, but lots of people did.
So later in the show, we'll be joined by Marley Packer for an update on the Women's Six Nations, and Nick Puriwal will be joining us to look ahead to the Investec Champions Cup. But let's have a quick look at the Prem results from the weekend, and what a weekend it was. Wins for Leicester, Northampton, Harlequins, Bristol, and for Sale. Crazy weekend for you, though. Games Friday, Saturday and Sunday.
I know. I put in an honest weekend's work. Franklin's Gardens was buzzing. It wasn't quite the same as Tottenham Hotspur, but it was equally packed with fans. And having been humbled by Bristol Bears, they produced what can only be classed as a top-quality performance against the champion Saracens. And they were just magnificent, really. They came out of the blocks fast, scored two tries, and they did to Saracens what Saracens did to Harlequins, really.
Then you were at what was a bit of a humdinger at the Stoop, controversial one in many ways as well, for the 7-minute yellow card that was or wasn't. I read Brian Moore's column today in which he said, we need to lay off the officials and we don't want it to turn into football. Do you agree with that? Was it just an error, or do you think that something seriously is amiss here in terms of what's gone on?
No, nothing was amiss at all. It was a simple human mistake. They happen on the field with quite a lot of regularity. Players knock on, players make mistakes. The officials made a mistake. Just to be clear, there was two yellow cards at the time against Harlequins. Both of them were illustrated in our graphics on TNT Sport because we were covering the game. The official timekeepers, just to make the important point, do not go off of our own graphics, off the TV. They have their own timekeeping. And unfortunately, on the TV, it said the Quinn second row came on with 4 minutes still remaining on his yellow card. It was probably more likely to be 2 minutes, actually, I think, 2.5 minutes. And look, they've come out and made a statement. It's been reviewed by the referees, director Paul Hull, and they just held their hand up and said, look, the timekeeper's made an honest mistake. Mm. And that's, let's just move on. It wouldn't have affected the outcome of the game.
No.
Bath didn't start playing until about the 56th minute of the match anyway. Mm. So I think my only gripe was that having spent quite a lot of time in the naughty chair myself and being yellow carded, I never managed to get on early. In fact, they probably kept me there a few minutes later.
How did that actually work then? When you're a player, did you get like a countdown from the fourth official to say you're going back on in 30 seconds, get ready? Or how does that work?
Well, listen, you have to officially sit in the you know, in the sin bin chair, which is, you know, which became a bench when England were at Twickenham once, didn't it? When they had four in there at once,
yeah.
But you have to sit in there. Look, it's there's a timer that goes on. I mean, normally one of your club officials, one of your club colleagues, is pretty close to you anyway, and can give you the heads up that you're going on. You're not allowed to leave the chair until about a minute before, I think, where you're you can go and, you know, quickly warm yourself up again and get ready for action. But look, it was a, like you said, it's been a cracking weekend of Premiership rugby. Some amazing bounce back performances from all the sides. I'm not quite sure what these guys are drinking at the moment, but I think the standard of rugby since the end of the Six Nations has really picked up where the international tournament finished, really. Maybe because there's this jeopardy. We've now got 8 teams in the Premiership out of 10 that have got a realistic chance, with Sale's win, brilliant win, 41-5 against Exeter, of actually finishing in that top four. So, you know, no team has managed back-to-back wins apart from Bristol, who weren't even in the conversation and have picked up 2 5-pointers, and suddenly from nowhere they're right in the thick of it. So
are they the team to fear? I just had a look at their fixtures earlier on at who they've got left, and they've got Newcastle at home, Leicester away, Saracens at home, and Quinns away to finish. And the form that they're in at the moment, I mean, you look at that win that they had over Northampton, and everybody went, well, it's probably because Northampton not quite right for Six Nations, not maybe ready, their defence let them down. But are we not giving Bristol enough credit for what they've done? For a, let's face it, Pat Lamb was under such pressure earlier in the season, and now they're making a late race for the playoffs.
I mean, listen, this is a team that have been up the top of the table before under Pat Lamb. They've won the Challenge Cup. They've got some high-profile players, and when they are at their best, they're a force to be reckoned with. And maybe they just slipped under the radar, but with Newcastle now, their next Prem game, they've got every chance of closing the gap. But, you know, all you have to be able to do at the moment as a team is focus on yourself. You can't be looking at what other teams are doing. You know, if you put a series of games together, then you've got a chance of winning. Sale, for instance, you know, if they'd have lost yesterday, I think they'd have been out the picture. They've won with 5 points, probably their best attacking performance of the season so far. You know, they absolutely dominated Exeter. And suddenly, they're one win away from getting to Quinns, who are in the top four. So listen, it's going to go to the wire. It's going to be very exciting. It could come down to bonus points, which is why Bath picking up 2 bonus points at the weekend against Quinns. I think Saracens picking up that crucial one against Northampton. You know, it could come down to bonus points. So
bonus points really make a difference, don't they? I mean, they keep teams playing right until the end of a game because there's always something riding on it. They're such a positive thing, aren't they? Did you have bonus points when you played or not?
Yeah, we did. We did, not at the very beginning of the Premiership, but they came in. And as you say, if you look at it, because it's so competitive now, you know, teams are able to, particularly when they're playing at home, they're picking up wins. And if you can't pick up a win, what you have to do is pick something up. I mean, look at that Bath-Harlequins game. I mean, they were 40-3 down after 50 minutes, Bath. Now, before bonus points were introduced, you know, they may have thrown the towel in and it could have got a whole lot worse. Suddenly, once they picked up 2 quick tries, they were suddenly in with a chance of getting the bonus point try, which they did. Rory McConachie crossed, and then Elliot Stoop got the losing bonus points. So for them, you know, the aggregate amount of points that they picked up in 2 weeks is 7, and Quinns have got 5 in 2 weeks. So, you know, yes, they do make a difference, because if you're doing that every 2 weeks, you know, you pick up an extra win, which could be the difference between being in the top four or not.
Yeah, so if you had to pick a top four now, who would it be?
Well, that's a bit naughty, isn't it, really, to throw that on me. But if the point is that the picture is changing every week. We have actually selected our top four as pundits on TNT. And I can tell you now that after we selected them, everyone was busy trying to reselect them every week. But I will be, I'm not sure, I suppose I can reveal the ones I picked.
Are they in an envelope or something? Or is it secret? Is it?
I don't know whether they are or not. I can't really remember. But, you know, as someone who's, you know, who's happy to put it out there, I picked Northampton, Saracens, Bath and Exeter.
Yes.
But the thing is that, you know, good sides are going to miss out, right? I mean, I could be, you know, wildly wrong. But, you know, all I know is there's 8 teams that are in the mix. We now break for 1 week and we go to the Investec Champions Cup, and we're going to preview some of those games, which are involving 6 of our Premiership teams. So the momentum they have is going to carry on going. And it's a very exciting run.
Well, that could be, we just mentioned Bristol, but that could be a good thing for them or not, maybe, because they're obviously not involved in the Investec Challenge Cup or Champions Cup. So they've got some time off. Another team with time off, Newcastle, were involved in what can only be described as an absolutely mental game on Friday night. They, though, I think, are going to have a say in the title running at some point, because they're going to win a game, aren't they? I mean, hugely improved under Steve Diamond. That 100-minute, I'm not quite sure what their plan was in the last 10, 15 minutes of those 20 minutes. They seemed to just be going for scrum after scrum after scrum, and they just weren't getting the distance that they needed. But do you see them making a difference? Look at their games in their running as well. They've got Bristol away, Sale at home, Bath at home, and Gloucester away. So I think they will have a key say at some point, won't they?
Absolutely, will have. And look, as you say, Steve Diamond's added a lot to that. They're going to pick up one win out of one of those games. Leicester were probably quite fortunate in the end. It was absolutely vital that they won that match. They ended up with 12 men on the field by the end. And Carl Dixon, the referee, the match official, was probably having kittens, because I think the game kicked off at 7:30 and finished at about 10 o'clock or something. I mean, it was absolutely ridiculous. So it is what it is. We had drama, just a different type of drama to what we saw the following day, obviously at the Stoop.
So the Premiership is on pause now for the Investec Champions Cup, and we'll look ahead to that shortly.
But first, joining us from another exciting round of the Women's Six Nations is the England captain, Marley Packer. Live from the England team hotel, or maybe home, I'm not sure.
I'm actually at home, so we've been given Sunday, Monday off, so it's actually been really refreshing to actually have some time at home.
Have you been Easter egg hunting, I would hope?
Yes, I have been Easter egg hunting with Oliver. He only got one main chocolate egg, though.
Only one?
Yeah, and then I just got him some little monster trucks because he's so into them at the moment. And chocolate, he just gets a little bit, wants more and more and more, like all kids do. So
yeah. I guess you've got to be slightly careful how much chocolate you eat. I mean, I don't, and Lawrence doesn't. Well, Lawrence is getting on a bike soon, so I guess he has to. But have you had any this weekend?
I might have just had a little dairy milk bar out of a Easter egg this weekend so far. But I do have an egg waiting for me, but when I choose to have it, probably be next week in camp when I just want 5 minutes to myself.
Well, talking of eggs, England Red Roses did pretty good with the egg at the weekend. Was it 8 tries, I think, wasn't it, against Wales? And some notable performances. Zoe Allcroft's 50th cap, a memorable performance from her. Was it a sellout at Ashton Gate? I think it was, wasn't it? It was pretty close to sold out anyway.
Yeah, it was pretty close. I think it was around the 19,000 mark, which was pretty epic. The atmosphere was just absolutely incredible. The biggest a crowd out of London for a Red Roses game. So we get really good numbers usually down at Exeter, but Ashton Gate was really good for us.
Highest crowd actually at a rugby game this weekend, higher than all the men's fixtures.
Oh, wow. That's epic, that is, to be fair. But you could really hear the crowd. The whole atmosphere is just amazing at the moment. And, you know, the fans staying afterwards to try and say hello to you. And there's just so many of them these days. Gone are the days where you could go and interact with the crowd and do that and sign. You just have to say thank you and keep on going, or you'd be out there for hours.
And Molly, it was another emphatic win, obviously, against a much improved Wales team, I'm sure. But John Mitchell, your coach, obviously, he's very excited at the moment about the potential. He was talking about, well, he rung the changes, didn't he? And he's trying to give everyone a bit of an opportunity to lay down a marker, you know, ahead of that World Cup, you know, home World Cup. But he talked about you having sort of three different teams and three different ways of playing. So it's definitely a tournament about evolving into, you know, and improving all the time.
Yeah, definitely. And I think that's the way we're looking at it as players. We were very set piece focused and we were very dominant in that. It's not something we've come away from, but also we want to give license for our backs to play and not just have a set piece game, but also a real attacking game, but also being able to kick when we need to. From actually watching the game back, I think probably we overplayed in a couple of areas at the weekend, but I think that's learnings for us going forward. We got, like you said, 8 tries against a good Wales team now. They've been full-time contracted for 2 years, so now they're actually seeing the rewards of not just the the playing, but also like the fitness side of being full-time professionals, that team cohesion, that being able to train together on a regular basis. I think their setup is still very different to the Red Roses, but you can really still see those improvements and how they came out to play against us.
Yeah, because that was the first time in 7 years, actually, that you've not put 50 points on them, isn't it? So, I mean, I guess from the tournament's perspective, it's pretty positive to have them getting stronger. But also, I mean, you highlighted it there, but only one of your 8 tries actually came from a wall this weekend, didn't it? So you're clearly trying to open up a little bit more than you have done before.
Yeah, definitely. And I think, you know, you look at it and yeah, it's the first time we haven't put plus 50 points on them, but it's, we're trying to play a different brand of rugby as well. And I think the rotation, different players that came in from last week to this week, we're still trying to all connect as well. So I think for the latter end of the tournament, you'll see the team that Mitch sees as his like regular starters, which actually if made sure that they've impressed these early games. I think the Scotland game this week will be, again, another week of where different combinations are tried out and, yeah, see what we got. But Scotland are on a high flying at the moment. They played really well against France. Like, France only got a try at the end of the game. I think there was 5 minutes to play. Otherwise, it was only 8-5 for most of the game. So it just shows where Scotland are. They beat Wales last week. It's actually a really exciting couple of weeks coming up for us as Red Roses.
Marley, I mean, clearly you've won 101 caps now, haven't you? So you've been around the squad for a fair while. Can you remember a time when there's been more competition for places in the team? Because clearly, with the next game coming up against Scotland, John Mitchell's going to have some headaches when it comes to selection. I mean, right across the team, it feels like there's serious competition for places. And every time someone plays, even an established player then has to come off the bench and remind everyone that they're still quite good as well.
Yeah, definitely. And I think, like, across the board, we have got, in every position, at least 3 players that are world-class, I would say. Like, even Connie Powell, she came off the bench for the Roses at the weekend, and I think she made 3-4 line breaks. Like, that's phenomenal in itself. So she's massively putting her hand up. Rosie Gallagher getting player of the match. I think she's someone, with Abby Ward coming back into the setup after having little Hallie. I think, you know, the pressure around that area and competition is really good. You've got Mozza, so she's back row, second row player, plays for Sale Sharks. She had a very good WXB for us, playing in at 6, but could also go into that second row position. She's come back from injury. She was in full training last week, will be in again this week. So in the forwards, hot competition. In the backs, the same again. Sydney Gregson, she got her 4th cap at the weekend after 9 years between her 3rd and her 4th. So, like, that's an amazing achievement in itself. But I think she's really putting her hand up to wanting one of those centre shirts, especially in at 13. Mitch really likes pace and speed at that 13 position. So she's putting her hand up there. And then Abby Dow, Ellie Cordun and Jess Breach are just flying our back 3 are at the moment.
How much of a boost did it give the girls to have Jamie George come into camp? And do you think this idea of cross-pollination between the men's and the women's team could actually help? I mean, is there things that the men can learn from you and vice versa?
I think definitely. More for us, it's like how the men do things. It's just those little, like, one percenters, how it's just a different voice can change. They can be saying exactly the same as your throwing coach, but because it's come from Jamie George in a different way, actually lands better. And, you know, the girls really enjoyed it when they were in. He did some fun games, but then also some accuracy throwing. I can't say too much because I know nothing about line-out throwing, but I know they really came off of it and enjoyed it. And I think it's just us as the Red Roses, we always follow the men, and for them to come in and want to spend time with us, like, it was Jamie's off day. It was an early morning session and he was there. And I think, you know, we can link up when is appropriate for them and for us, it could be really good and work both ways around. I think the way we do things is different to the men, but actually they could learn a thing from us and we could definitely learn a thing from them.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hi, I'm Lawrence Dallaglio, and this episode of the Evening Standard Rugby Podcast is brought to you in partnership with QBE Business Insurance. QBE is one of the world's leading insurers, and they will help your business build resilience through risk management and insurance solutions.
So now, in association with our partners, QBE Business Insurance, we're going to look at how we grow the game with Marley. Marley, what's the single thing that you would like to see happen that would elevate the women's game even further than where it is now?
I think for me to keep elevating the game and to put it in the best possible place is that professionalism in the PWR League. If we cannot make it some professionals in other players that are having to work alongside, if we can make it that, even if it was a part-time, so, you know, 2-3 days a week in doing rugby, the other 2 days a week having to go to work or find other sources of income, that would be massive for the women's game across the board. And I think, you know, the teams that struggle in the league are the ones that don't have the international players that have got full-time contracts. Then that will balance that out. But then for me also, it's about grassroots rugby, you know, the championship sides, they're the ones that feed the PWR teams to be able to have enough numbers to train week in, week out, to then put aside in at the weekend. And then the players that don't make that match day 23 or your travelling reserves, they actually go back for those championship games. And, you know, how can we grow the championship to have more of a link between the PWR and the champ, and the skills that we get, the resources we get in the PWR, they get it also.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's never been a better time, really, to get involved in women's rugby. I think it's certainly, it feels like there's a huge excitement. You know, we're talking every time we talk, Molly, about something new that's happening in the game. You know, biggest crowd outside of Twickenham at Ashton Gate. So, you know, you guys are certainly doing your bit.
Do you think that there's enough done by the men as advocates for the women's game? Or would you like to see more from them? I mean, obviously, we've got the likes of Ugo Monya, who is a big, big fan of the women's game. But do you think enough comes from within the England men's setup to actually support you?
I think what we want is the Red Roses, is players to champ us, but do it because they want to do it, not because they feel they have to, or there's, you know, an image that they have to post on social media or support us in a way that they feel is appropriate to what the outside world see. It's the fact of Jamie coming in means so much to us. The way Ugo spoke about us last week after his punditry, it speaks volumes. And I think, you know, people then will listen, which then will then make them tune in and actually see it for themselves. And that's what it's about for us. It's not about forcing that relationship. It's about it being organic and growing. I think, you know, like Lawrence just said, women's rugby is massively on the rise. The Red Roses are taking massive strides forward. The biggest crowd in a weekend for rugby was women's rugby this weekend. And I think, you know, that's credit to the product we put on the pitch, but also the RFU, like the sponsors that get us out there, because you've got to be able to see it to do it.
No, there was obviously wins in the Women's Six Nations for France and for Italy as well. I was very impressed with Italy, but England are still on the full complement of points and sitting at the top of the table. Now, Marley, you've got a fallow week this week. You're at home now. Just give us a quick summary of what this week looks like. Are you back training on Wednesday?
No, we're back training tomorrow. So we're in Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. And then we have got the weekend off Friday, Saturday, Sunday. We'll have a running session on Saturday, probably designed for us, and a gym session. But actually, this week will be about just making sure that we're hitting all our markers fitness-wise, and the S&Cs are happy, but then also just fixing up some of our skills, how we want to play, and just looking forward to Scotland. I think it's been quite nice that we've built into this two games. We've got a week off, we can review them, but then really concentrate on Scotland, because they seem to be a team that is massively growing at the moment.
Well, if you manage to beat Scotland, you'll do what the men's team haven't managed to do for a fair few years. So we wish you all the best. Thank you for checking in with us again. Have a great training week, and we'll catch up with you next week ahead of that round three match against Scotland.
Perfect. Thank you very much for having me, guys. Take care.
So joining us now is the Evening Standard rugby correspondent, Nick Perriwell. Nick, how are you?
Very well, Steve. Thanks. Yeah, just enjoyed the Easter weekend and good bit of rugby either side of it. So, yeah, well, good. Thank you.
We're looking ahead now to the Champions Cup round of 16, which, looking at the games, there are some tasty ties ahead. I'm going to Quinn's on Friday night against Glasgow. Would you be there? Is that the game that you're most looking forward to?
Yeah, that's the one I'll be covering. Yeah, it's going to be a good one, absolutely. The phony war's gone, and it's the teams that stand up now that will see where they really, who the really good teams are, effectively, and it forms a lot to do with that. But winning these really tense, crucial knockout games is a bit of an art form in itself, so it's always fascinating. And I think Quinns will be mightily relieved and delighted that they got back to form this weekend, so let's see if they can carry that through again.
It's not going to be easy, though, is it, against Glasgow? Up to second in the URC, beat the Scarlets comprehensively at the weekend. Think they pose a threat to Quinns?
Yeah, absolutely. Definitely so. I think home advantage is absolutely massive, though, when it comes to this stage of the competition. And that's fairly boring. But look at the results over the last few weeks. You know, Saris go up to Northampton and lose. If they'd been at home, if the game had been exactly the same, then it'd have been at Stonex, and Saracens would probably have won that match. And you could argue that Harlequins versus Bath, if that had been at the Wreck rather than the Stoop, then Bath would have won. So in those tight calls, I think home advantage counts for, I don't know, 10 points, 12 points, maybe even as much as that. And I think that's the kind of thing that could swing a game in your favour. And Quinns feel like they've worked very, very hard to secure themselves a home knockout tie, and they're determined not to waste that advantage now.
Yeah. Lol, are you off to Poland again this weekend to cover this for TNT, or is Stockley Park finally finished?
Yes, I'm at Stockley Park. It's been renovated to our satisfaction. But as Nick said, some fantastic games. Obviously, eight quality matches. The extra round of jeopardy, I think, really does add something to this competition. And I suppose from a Gallagher Premiership perspective, to have six clubs very much in the hunt, you know, in these games, it is pretty tasty indeed. I'm excited going into this round of 16. I'm particularly excited about one game, which is Bordeaux against Saracens, because Mark McCall, who's obviously been at Saracens for, you know, an eternity. I think he has a 75% win ratio there. He talked about the defeat at Bordeaux earlier on in the season by 50 points as being a watershed moment for Saracens, and a moment of reflection where they really looked at themselves deep and hard and came up with some honest conversations. And obviously their performance against Harlequins was as a direct result of that. Yes, they lost to Northampton, but you could argue that the quality of Northampton's performance was right up there as well. I don't think Saracens were necessarily too much at fault for that. They just got hit with a fast start, and they still managed to score four tries and a bonus point. So that game in particular will tell us a lot about Saracens' mindset. You know, can they go back to Bordeaux, a place where they lost by 50 points? And it's never going to be easy. I think only one team managed to win there this season, one French team. So can they go there and eke out a result with the squad that they have and stay alive in this competition? And I'm dead excited about that game.
Yeah, Bordeaux rested Jalibert and Penno at the weekend, didn't they? So they'll be fit and flying and raring to go. Does it depend which Saracens turn up, the ones that beat Quinns or the one that played at Northampton?
No, I don't think so. I mean, I think, listen, the team that played at the Tottenham Stadium, I mean, that was probably one of the best club performances I've seen for quite some time. And to be able to come out of that level again the following week is not easy. So, look, they've rested a few players. I think Itoje will be back in the team. They'll be at full strength And it's just a great opportunity to see how two great clubs go up against each other. And the other match that I've sort of picked out is Northampton Saints against Munster. Munster, they're a phenomenal European Cup team. You know, they're like chewing gum. You just can't get rid of them once they're stuck on you. You know, they seem to hang in there. They hang in games that they've got no right to hang in, you know. And
that's an awful analogy. Stuck with chewing gum. But how many times have you trodden in chewing gum? Or you used to have it under your desk, didn't you, when you were at school?
That's what I'm saying.
I know what you mean.
I mean, listen, it's a compliment. They hang in games where you know, you think you've got them well beaten, and then somehow they come up with something, you know, there's something magical about their fans and about them in this competition. But Northampton are top of the table, high flying, and I thought they produced a magnificent performance. And other than their win, captained by Pat Lamb many years ago, this is a competition where they clearly have underperformed because they haven't necessarily had the squad, you know, to compete on two fronts. But this season, with Courtney Lawrence in the sort of form he's in, they've been imperious in this competition. They've already been over, didn't they, to Munster and won. So it's going to be a fascinating tussle, that one.
Yeah, and Nick, Exeter against Bath, the only, obviously, all-premiership match. Exeter and Bath actually playing each other now two games in a row, aren't they? Because they've got this game and then they've got the Prem game as well to follow. Which way do you see this going? Exeter got a bit of a humbling on Sunday against Sale. Bath obviously came flying back against Harlequins on Saturday, but didn't quite have enough. Tight game?
Yeah, absolutely. I think, again, home advantage. It's hard to look past in terms of, you know, Bath will be desperate to knock them over and keep on rolling in this competition as they start to try to realise the potential, the rich potential they've got and all the quality players they've got in their squad. While Exeter is a new group and a young group and inexperienced, you can't think that might count against them, but equally they could just go out and play with no fear, and there'll definitely be a reaction to the defeat and its manner from the Sale game. And so you'll see an extra team that just fly into the whole thing. And the big challenge for Bath is if they're going to stand up and be the team that everybody wants them to be and that they want to be, and certainly their supporters want them to be, then they have to go and win games like this. Because really, there's an argument that says, well, I mean, the first half at Quinn's, that kind of thing shouldn't really happen, should it? And it does happen to teams, but it's about how you respond. Clearly, they responded in the match, but they didn't win the game. And if you're thinking about titles and if you're thinking about the kind of investment that Bruce Craig has put into Bath over the years, albeit he would probably admit, and the club would probably admit, they've got quite a lot of things along the way, now they're sort of settling down, you know, they're building the right kinds of foundations. But at some point, you have to go and plant the flag, don't you, really? And this is the kind of game where they can go and do that. So I think they'll be pretty dangerous, but I think it'd be very, very tight. It's almost too tight to call this one, to be quite honest, because there's compelling reasons why you could argue for both sides are going to go out and win this game. So I think it'll be the kind of game that it could turn on the penultimate play or something like that, or hopefully not, but perhaps a mistake.
Give us a winner then in the two games that you've picked out. That one you've just mentioned, Exeter Bath, who do you think will win that one?
Yeah, I think Exeter. Just a feeling. I can't back that up completely. And I think Quinns will win. Part of that is because they put a lot of effort and emotional intensity into securing this home match in this competition. So there's been a big emphasis for a long time on getting this far, and they don't want to let that go. And I think that obviously, you know, Glasgow got a couple of injuries to key players still. You know, even if they come back, they won't be in their rhythm. So, you know, in Quinns, it was vital that Quinns hit back from the Saracens game, and they did do that, albeit it wasn't perfect, was it? It's far from perfect, but it was important that they showed a response and got the result. They did both those things. So they come into this game with momentum. They are at home. They're a very dangerous side when they get going. And I think you saw from the weekend just gone, Esther Hazen was back in the groove. And I think that's extremely important to everything they do. And I think it'll be enough for them to win this game.
Yeah. And Lawrence, do you see two Prem winners from the games you've picked out, Saracens and at Bordeaux and Northampton against Munster?
Do you know what? I see Northampton winning. I just think, you know, if they play the way that they have been playing and their set piece seems to be holding up quite well, I do see them winning, yeah. And with regard to Saracens, that's a very interesting one to call. My heart wants to go with Saracens because I just think that, you know, with Owen Farrell's, you know, last season there, certainly for the next few years anyway, you know, when he's at the top of his game in terms of the mindset, I think everyone follows. And whatever he said to the team before they came out at Tottenham was on a different level. And, you know, if they can reach that level, then I can't see anyone beating them, really. So, do you know what? I'm going to put my neck out and say yes. And it's going to be quite a long neck because I think Bordeaux have only been beaten once at home this season. So let's hope they've got the minerals, Saracens, to come back with a win.
That'd be cool. Right, well, let's just have a quick look at the other games. So the Bulls will take on Lyon on Saturday. Also on Saturday, we've got the Stormers against La Rochelle. Leinster-Leicester is a tasty one to look forward to as well on Saturday. And then the other game on Sunday could be actually the tie of the round, couldn't it? That's Toulouse against Racing, which a lot of stars on view in that game. And let's also mention Gloucester playing Castres on Friday night in the Challenge Cup, and Sale are up against the Ospreys on Saturday. Yeah, so lots of great rugby to look forward to, Lawrence.
Yeah, there is some mouth-watering ties. Unfortunately, I'll be stuck inside the studio for 2 days, but do think of me whenever game you'll go to. You guys, whilst you're sipping the pink champagne at Harlequin's, after hopefully a win for the Londoners.
I look forward to you having a run around the studio with Craig Doyle this time. You were seen disappearing offset in your sprint race yesterday. Who won? Who won that race? Because your cap fell off just as you were about to pip him to the line, I think.
It went to a photo finish, and the there's a steward's inquiry which is still underway. I'm nursing a sore hamstring and a sore and probably a sore ego.
In which case, then it'll have to be a press up challenge, won't it, in Stockley Park?
It certainly will be. Listen, my great thanks to you both, to Steve, to Nick, and also to our England captain Marley, who'll be joining us again next week to look ahead to round 3 of the Women's Six Nations, where England are absolutely flying. So I hope you enjoyed the podcast, and please download us, give us a 5-star review, and we look forward to hearing from you next week.
The Evening Standard Rugby Podcast with Lawrence Dallaglio.
Hi, I'm Lawrence Dallaglio, and this episode of the Evening Standard Rugby Podcast is brought to you in partnership with QBE Business Insurance. QBE is one of the world's leading insurers, and they will help your business build resilience through risk management and insurance solutions.